Can I have your attention, please? I'm sure you are discussing some very critical issues, but I think we're also running short of time, so... Excuse me. We need to have your attention, please. Thanks. Before I go back to the panel on some of the issues or the questions which have come from the House, let me welcome and introduce Dr. Lula Dere. She is the Executive Secretary of the African Council for Sustainable Health and Development. Welcome, Lula. I hope the last 30 minutes have been quite useful and productive, and you managed to raise some other issues which we can address during this the next few minutes. But we also got some feedback from the participants and the audience here, and we tried to sort of look into some of the issues. Obviously, we won't be able to address all the questions or all the queries which have come forward, but we'll try to address some of the key points which have been raised. And then I'm sure there'll be further opportunities to discuss it after the session among the participants and with the panelists. Let me start with the minister again, specifically because I know he's committed to another session, he has to leave. Minister, I think one of the issues which we are facing is obviously the shortage of workers. But the other important element is that how do we optimally utilize the workforce which is available out there, and then not only to utilize them, but how to motivate them in terms of staying on the job. And that's why there's a retention issue, not only in terms of where they're working, but what they are not from south to north or north to south migration, but within the public and private sector and from the civil society to within the regions. And I think retention is a critical issue which goes to the heart of addressing this shortage of health workers. So we'd like to hear from you. Is it a problem which you are facing in terms of health worker shortage in Ethiopia, and some of the steps you might have taken to address this?
Yes, to address the problem, as I said earlier, we designed this flooding and retention strategy. Flooding to overproduce and address the supply and demand issue, and retention to keep those who trained in the country. And the retention strategy covers two areas, non-financial and financial. With regard to financial, we increased the salary of our doctors, for instance, about 70% recently. It may not mean a lot compared to what it was before, but that's a significant increase considering our economy. And the other financial issues are like some, of the duty payments and so on, which has increased significantly. And from the non-financial incentives, like training opportunities, further training, and also other financial issues are considered. So we have a complete guideline to address retention. But as I said earlier, the most important one is the supply part of it. We need to really overproduce or produce enough. That's how we can address the problem. Retention alone cannot address it. And the main should not be retention, but it should be the supply side. Because Ethiopia cannot compete really with developed countries. Whatever we pay, it cannot be an incentive by any standard compared to any nation who can pay better. So the centerpiece is the supply, the overproducing, and we believe that we can address it that way. Thank you.
Aruna, we just heard the issue of production and then scaling up. But sometimes we get trapped in a argument where this discussion usually is confined to producing more doctors or some, to a certain degree, nurses. But we really don't look at the other alternative strategies or the approaches which have recently come up, or the role or the contribution they're playing in terms of delivery of services. What is your opinion in terms of looking at some alternative approaches and also the contribution by non-traditional cadre of health workers in terms of delivery of services?
It's a very good question, and it reminds me that when yesterday I was hearing Bill Gates' remarks. At the end of his remark, he said that primary health care is the issue which should be dealt very effectively in order to combat HIV, tuberculosis, or malaria. And the issue of the healthcare workers who are basically not doctors or even not maybe nurses, but paramedics with a certain amount of trainings, and if they are there in, and they are the people who can be a very good force to combat a lot of problems of the rural health places, be it in Asia or be it in Africa. And what we have done, we have tried to do that to make sure that maternal child health workers who are there in the village areas, who may not have a very good education, but they have education up to 8th grade or 10th grade, and they had been used as a forces in order to combat, in order to reduce maternal and child health death through various ways. And one of the ways is to give them information, very simple basic information, and to motivate them to go to various areas of their villages to give the information to the local women, local leaders, local teachers, and so that they could help themselves with various ways. So I think that was one of the ways where we can, and these are the maternal child health workers who don't need a lot of money to pay them, very simple basic like $5 or $6 or up to $10, which can be used by our government because that is not a lot of pay to reduce maternal death. And in Nepal, that has been one of the successful case stories where those maternal child health workers had been able to, with help of them, we had been able to reduce our maternal death from 830 to 230 in 20 years. And in between, we didn't have a lot of doctors or hospitals where a lot of women could go for delivery or cesarean sections. But thanks to very simple information and very simple ideas and very simple technology used by those maternal child health workers, we had been able to reduce maternal death. So I think that is one of the ways, and I could go and go on these issues, but I think these are the issues and these are the ways with a very simple idea, simple technology, so many things can be done in rural health, rural places and in primary health care.
Thanks, Aruna. Again, emphasizing and reminding us again about the importance and the power of the community health workers and other mid-level workers, especially and also using this, not forgetting that the traditional technologies and approaches do work and they also deliver. But we're talking of these technologies, Craig. You've earlier mentioned, you know, that the computers are user-friendly, they are being more and more used, the digital and IT technologies. But there are certain issues around this, about the real availability of this in terms of their outreach, in terms of their connectivity, in terms of other similar problems, especially in Africa and other remote parts of the world where we are still facing even to have some basic infrastructure in place. So how do you think that we know that they can and they have a very important role to play, but these challenges are also there, and we know these are fundamental if we want to sort of introduce these technologies on a large scale. So from your experience, what are the some of the suggestions which can help us resolve this problem?
Well, there is a parallel challenge that the world faces, and that's just basic education, where you like to use computers as a tool. And I want to make very clear here that I'm talking always about using a computer and the Internet as a tool, not as a solution, but as a tool to get to the solution. In education, the solution is a good teacher, and you give the teacher the capability of the tool in the classroom. So in the education sector, we are involved in training teachers how to effectively use the tool. Healthcare equivalent is training health professionals or paraprofessionals how to use the tool. We as a company, in working with education ministers around the world, have trained nearly 6 million teachers. We use a master teacher pyramid concept where you train a group of teachers, and then each one goes back to their locale and trains another group of teachers. So you get kind of an exponential explosion on it. You can do this face-to-face, or increasingly you can do this online. But the issue is how to train people to effectively use the tool. And if we're really talking remote diagnostics, remote monitoring, that's in fact what you're doing. You have a tool. You want to train people to effectively use it, but you still need the medical training of someone in the system to make a judgment. You're very clear that connectivity is important, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. In fact, 256K connectivity in sub-Saharan Africa averages about $250 a month, which is more than the cost of a computer. So it's connectivity is a much... I see some people shaking your head no, but in fact, if you take kind of the average in sub-Saharan Africa, connectivity is 10 to 100 times more expensive than it is in Western Europe or the U.S. It's tremendously expensive, and it really dwarfs the cost of the hardware. So unfortunately, the good news is you're starting to get cell phone infrastructure built out. The latest broadband wireless technologies of WiMAX, LTE technologies are coming on. These are far-reaching broadband wireless technologies, which I think can be put in place without putting the expensive wiring and all the fiber and copper in place. But that infrastructure really has to be there to take advantage of these technologies. Last point is that sometimes you can get around that. The commitment made this morning for the eye clinics in India, in fact, uses a modified Wi-Fi technology. This room is connected by Wi-Fi. There are directional Wi-Fi technologies which have a reach over 100 times conventional Wi-Fi, so that'd get you something like 10,000 meters of reach. That's an unlicensed, basically free transmission spectrum that you can do the same sort of technology with. But it's still somewhat limited in its reach to 10 kilometers or 6 or 8 miles.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks. I think let me at this time invite Hillary to come in and to brief us on some of the key issues or themes which have been sort of presented during the session.
Hi, everyone. For those of you that I haven't met yet, my name is Hillary Chen, and I am the Deputy Chair for Global Health. So I work with Tom. We have a big announcement that they're preparing for in the next session, so Tom can't be with us right now. But I did want to just take a minute to talk about some of the themes and gems that you all came up with in the interim period. And I was back looking at them, and it's striking. There are so many good ideas, and, of course, not all of them can get up here. But I do want you to know that one of the things we do as staff at CGI is we – all of these things that are being typed into the computer, we get those in really, really long documents, and we actually do read them afterwards. So even if you don't see it up here, we do look at this information as we think about shaping CGI's efforts in the future and connecting partners. So for the themes, you started with an emphasis on the need to focus on primary preventive health care in order to reduce the demand for curative care. And I think we heard that from some of our speakers earlier as well. Also, the discussion around the working conditions, so not just the number of workers, but also the conditions under which they do their work and the effect that that might have on retention and their interest in continuing. Creating greater standardization of training packages and supporting continuous learning. I think this is really important in terms of making sure that that folks are well trained and comfortable with what they're doing. And then finally, the need to establish accreditation of medical training and other kinds of health worker training is also important. GEMS. So we're putting a few folks on the spot here. In our GEMS, you guys are very assertive. The first is for Intel to quarterback an alliance to establish and support a single international resource of training content and tools to be used by all developing countries. And actually, I know there are discussions right now that are ongoing around some open source curriculum development and other efforts. So I think this is a good one. And then second, the need for Johnson & Johnson-like campaign to support public health workers, similar to what they've done for nursing. Looking in the private sector clinics and how they train and retain health workers, and then also reforming the way that education of doctors and nurses and other healthcare workers is financed and thinking in a sophisticated way about what kinds of incentives that creates for the people involved. So we have very little time left. Unfortunately, as you guys know, with all of the events this morning, we're sort of a little short on time. But what I'd like to do is just turn it back over to Dr. Shaikh, and maybe we can just do a final. If people have very quick responses, then we'll do that for a couple of minutes. And then after that, we'll do a few commitment certificate presentations. Thank you.
Thanks, Hillary. And thanks to the facilitators and to you for doing a wonderful job. I think very quickly, maybe Lola, you are here and you might be wondering why I'm here, you know, so let's start from you, really. And so maybe you'd like to see, and there are some of these issues have come forward, and I think there are recurring themes and some of the specific ideas as well. Would you like to pick any one of those and then comment?
Thank you. Many of these things are very relevant to how to not only expand the health workforce, but to retain them. But what particularly catches my attention is the need to improve the conditions for health workers. The improvement of conditions for health workers go beyond their salaries. It includes the environment within which they work. And my experience in Africa also shows that if you pay salaries and people don't have anything to work with, you're not going to retain them. I'm an example of that. I left a pediatric clinic because I often knew what to do but had nothing to work with, and that's why I left. So it's important to give them things to work with and to improve their working conditions. Linked to that is the need to improve the management capacity within the health sector that sustains and retains them.
Thanks, Lola. And Craig, are you ready to create that alliance?
I think it said quarterback. Whatever. I think there's a potential of a great parallel effort here from the education sector into the healthcare sector. I would point out to the U.S. citizens in the audience is an interesting dichotomy here that if you get Medicare or government-financed health care, the U.S. government doesn't even reimburse for a telephone call, let alone remote diagnostics or email in the United States. So we have a long way to go in this country to get to the point that we're talking about for emerging economies where telemedicine is absolutely going to be a requirement. It's a requirement here for an entirely different reasons. You have to get the cost out of the system here and get quality, and that's how you're going to do it. But I think we'd be certainly willing to engage with other participants to see how we could create a parallel effort from the worldwide teacher training program that already exists.
Great. So this is the second commitment from you today. So.
I committed to have a discussion. Yeah.
Great. So how do you feel about that commitment, Aruna? You think it will help you?
Yeah. And again, I will come. I'm obsessed with primary health care, I think. And then I'll again come to the point that where the primary health care workers, be it in middle level, who can use the new technology, but at the same time, with the idea that local resources are also there to use, and I really emphasize on the medicine and all the new technologies, but I don't forget that the knowledge which had been generated from generation to generation from our grandmothers, grandfathers, great-grandfathers are still alive there and still can be used a lot in primary health care center settings, and it would be very wonderful to see the local old knowledge with the marrying the new computer. Let's do it.
Wonderful. Great. I think we have reached a point. I think we don't need to say anything further. I think it has been a very productive session. We have good discussion, good points raised. But I think we still have a little job to do. Before I thank the panelists for wonderful, wonderful discussion, contribution, and some commitments as well. And also to you, all of you, for raising some of these ideas and thoughts. But I think I request the panelists to and thank them and asking them to go down. I would invite now at this stage Donna E. Shalala. She's the professor of political science and president's Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. She has become professor of political science and president of. Wrong what?
I'm going to steal this. We must have given them the wrong talking points. I'm so sorry. We put you on the spot. Not his fault. So I'm just going to jump in here and invite Donna Shalala to the stage, who is the president of the University of Miami and has been absolutely fantastic.
Thank you very much.
And gracious with us. So thank
president
you, Donna.
President Rensselaer is a physicist, not me. Let me invite Gary Cohen to the stage, the Executive Vice President of Becton, Dickinson and Company. And Dikibe Mutombo, Chairman and President of his foundation. I know who you are. Made my day. This center of excellence at the Biamba Marie Mutombo Hospital, named for your mother, is $1.5 million over 3 years. They're joining forces to develop a center of excellence in occupational health and immune system monitoring, which will focus on healthcare delivery, research, education, and training in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The commitment will provide in-kind safety medical devices such as syringes and blood collection devices, along with training on best clinical practices. Also, a surveillance system for tracking occupational safety will be rolled out in the hospital in collaboration with the University of Virginia. Further, BD will develop a capacity in the areas of immune system monitoring for CD4 count by in-kind donation and training in good lab practices. Very few people focus on occupational health. This is a wonderful commitment. So many of the accidents as well as the diseases are preventable. This is an extraordinary commitment. Over the course of 3 years, the commitment will have a direct impact on the lives of 26,000 people. Congratulations. A larger-than-life commitment. Another one. A commitment by Living Goods. Charles Slaughter, president of Living Goods. The commitment name is Living Goods Avon-like Sustainable Rural Health System, which will enhance access to low-cost, high-quality health products for poor families by extending the Living Goods current network in Uganda to over 650 communities in 20 districts over the next 2 years. The value is $2.5 million over 2 years. As scale, Living Goods intends to pay for itself, creating a truly sustainable system for defeating the diseases of poverty. Living Goods' diverse mix of both health and consumer goods enables community health workers to increase their financial sustainability and provides a means of cross-subsidizing critical health items. Living Goods Networks, which currently reaches 185 communities in Uganda, will expand its impact in 650 communities, improving the lives of 750,000 people and reducing mortality for 145,000 children under five by 20% to 30%. Please congratulate Living Goods. I'd like to recognize Bruce Charish from Doc to Doc, who's made a commitment to initiate a pilot program that will create the infrastructure to facilitate North American healthcare workers to engage in voluntary service in African hospitals. The first-year pilot goal is to fund 30 healthcare workers to spend 6 weeks in three countries, Ethiopia, Ghana, and Liberia, and each healthcare worker can be expected to treat at least 150 patients a week. I wish I could get my docs to treat 150 patients a week. At least 27,000 lives will be positively affected by this pilot commitment, and it's expected to have an immeasurable impact on both North American healthcare workers and the training of local staff. Where is Bruce? Is he here? There he is. Thank you. I'd also like to recognize Dr. Lola Isadare from Akoshad, the African Council for Sustainable Health Development, otherwise known, who has made a commitment to harness the resources of business to provide better health care in Africa. This commitment will deploy business models that will strengthen managerial competencies, improve performance of service delivery systems at the district level in selected African countries, and build the management capacity of a total of 125 public sector policymakers and implementers in the healthcare sector and employ them to work more effectively in cross-sector coalitions. These trained officers have the potential to positively impact the quality of services delivered to at least 1.5 million people per district in the country. Stand up again, Lola. And finally, I'd like to invite Dolores Jordan from the James R. Jordan Foundation to come forward. Dolores Jordan is the mother of Michael Jordan and the founder of the James R. Jordan Foundation. She's the co-author of Salt in His Shoes, Did I Tell You I Love You Today, and Family First, Winning the Parenting Game, which is a book that I have actually read. Yes. The Seven Principles of Parenting. I recommend it to everyone. She works to create programs for at-risk youth to excel in their educational endeavors and encourages parents to become more involved in the lives of their family. Under her leadership, the foundation has instituted a public-private partnership to establish a new women and children's hospital in Nairobi, Kenya, and has designed the A-Team Literacy Scholarship Program to provide funding for dedicated students in the United States to attend college. We're delighted to have you here. Give us a report.
Thank you so much. I know we're running for time now, but I just want to share, in going into Nairobi, I will talk about Nairobi, Kenya. As you well know, in Kenya, we have had challenges over the last, maybe 6 months. But going in, I've made a decision that I would go in and make a difference. It's a 45-bed hospital that I really wanted to expand to address some of the issues for women and children. And we've been able to do that with a strong support there. But at this time, what we're really doing and what I tried to do was to go in and get government, the president involved, from the president down to city council, who has really embraced the project. Right now, we're in the process of really providing the new facilities. They have provided properties for us. So right now, again, I had three things going in. It was getting government involved as well as talking about preventive. But not only talk about preventive, but it's also research and bringing in strong health care providers and educators. And we're partnered with a lot of U.S. Universities as well as medical facilities who have been a strong support. Cannot say enough for Johnson & Johnson, General Motors, Coca-Cola, and Citibank. They have really wrapped their arms around me as well as the U.S. government. So, again, we're just, again, pushing forward and trying to really make a difference by talking about preventive. Thank you.
Okay. So thank you, everyone, for the reports on your commitments. It's always really exciting to hear what people are doing. So I think it's about 12:20 or 12:25. It sounds like we are the other sessions are also wrapping up around the same time. So there will be a plenary session coming up. In I think they haven't told us exactly how much they're going to change the time, if at all, but I would go ahead and probably move in that direction. I think it will start shortly, and they'll flash the start time on the screen. So thank you so much, and we appreciate your participation.